Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Friday edition of The Drive. Another beautiful day. We have had just gorgeous weather all week long. Hope you've been able to enjoy it a little bit. Looks like a nice weekend, warming up just a little bit as we head through it, but it's going to be another nice weekend. We've got high school football action, of course, going on all across the state, and a couple of ball games here on our family of networks that you will be able to hear as Auburn High traveling to Montgomery, to Crampton Bowl, to take on Carver. Meanwhile, and that ball game coming up on Wings 94.3. Meanwhile, over on AU 100, it's a long-time matchup for the first time in AHSAA action as Lee Scott traveling to Glenwood. I mean, those schools have, you know, been for the last few years, they've been battling just for the top spot in private schools. Now here they are in 3A action in AHSAA.
At our core, we are a local show. Pivotal game for Auburn University tomorrow. Baseball playoffs going on. Huge slate up and down the SEC.
Oh, yes.
Tip off at Toomer's last night. Bill,
what a crowd.
Bill, you want to talk a little high school football to start the show?
I dig. What a crowd. Well,
I know what we've got
coming up here tonight, with it being Friday night. Night's high school football.
I think
night.
It would have been easy for the high school games to slip through the cracks if you hadn't mentioned them right off the bat, too, because there's a ton going on we're going to talk about. But you're right. It's a huge weekend
Auburn High can wrap up the first region title for Keith Etheridge.
And you can catch both the Auburn High School game and the Lee Scott game on the Auburn Network family of stations.
And you mentioned baseball. I believe we'll have some baseball coming up tonight. And just a couple of days ago, a lot of people were saying, "Wow, look for a Subway Series." The Dodgers may not even need to play again at home until the World Series. If they can win Game 5, they have destroyed the Mets at Shea.
The baseball playoffs have been awesome. Like the postseason has been. I mean, it's. I understand.
Well, awesome if you're a Met fan. I mean, if you're a Dodger, if you're a Met fan, it hasn't been that awesome.
The Dodgers Mets series has been the exception because you haven't had a lot of late,
not a lot of drama.
You have not had late inning intrigue in the Dodgers Mets series, but practically everywhere else this postseason, you've had high leverage tension and big home runs. And last night the
Guardians. With what happened there late in that ball game, you wonder how much that's going to take out of the Yankees. Yankees still lead that series 2-1, but what a huge, huge momentum shift and the place just going crazy last night.
If the Guardians, if they come back and win this series, and all possibilities are open as far as what happens after that. If they come back and win the series, that home run last night, Noel's home run, is one of the. That's one of the great postseason home runs ever. Like that's a two out. You're down three zilch if New York wins that.
Oh yeah,
game.
You're toast.
Yeah, I mean you're facing your backs are completely against the wall at that point as a team, and Noel comes in and just, I mean it was, I mean you talk about a no doubter, Bill. Mm-hmm. Like we've had a couple baseballs launched into orbit this postseason. The Ohtani upper decker comes to mind, and yeah, the homer that Noel launched last night to get it into extra innings, and then because look, Judge and Stanton looked like they'd taken control of that did that game, and instead, yeah, just a you know, we got a series again after
after
late inning heroics by the Guardians.
Now the Guardians. I mean, the thing is, if the Yankees can come back and win tonight, they regain. I mean, they've already had the upper hand because it's still as if, you know, home court. If you hold serve at home, you're going to win. But if they can win a game on the road, but you just have to wonder what their psyche is like after that last night.
Dodgers-Mets is about to start.
Yes, it is. Warm-up's going on right now.
Yeah, and then the Yankees game will be later, and I believe we will have that.
Yeah, we should have that one. That's a 7:08 first pitch tonight. So, yes, that's going on. But another huge weekend of college football. This is a – I don't know how many times have we said critical, must win, whatever. It is, again – and it's getting close to the point where if they don't do it now, you wonder. I'm talking about Auburn. If they don't get a win here now, it's very hard to imagine that they salvage, you know, much this season to be able to point and say, yeah, we're on the right track and we're making improvements.
I mean, a 2-4 start. A bye week sort of at the perfect time in the season because it splits it into two halves. I mean, I think the goal, obviously, I mean, you'd love to go 6-0 to the second half, you know, and point to clear, but clear improvement, not just on the field, but in the win-loss record in the second half, I think could be sold as positive momentum. And a loss tomorrow, I think especially a really deflating performance tomorrow, would probably you do wonder how many more times he can rally the team for. I mean, he expressed, you remember, he expressed some concerns about the effort late against Georgia, and so, you know, he thought the team should have shown more fight in that game, according to his post game press conference. Coach Freeze did so. I would think you're absolutely right. If Auburn can't muster, you know, if they can't pull out a win tomorrow, or if they can't at the very least come out of tomorrow's game with a great deal of confidence, then yeah, you just wonder, you know, how much more fight the team's going to have. I think that's a fair thing to have to express concern about.
Joining us as usual here on the Friday Drive, Coach Don Dunn. And Don, I don't know how many times you've been on a team in this type of situation, but I mean, am I wrong? I mean,
no.
this is – it's getting close to the point where you worry about losing some of the guys on the team, because, as you know, Dan's saying, you need to come out of this with some confidence. Well, Auburn's been close.
Yeah.
I don't think close is the kind of thing that's going to build confidence now.
No, you're exactly right. Especially like Dan said, after an open date, you want to try to recharge your batteries. Look at what you've been doing good, what hadn't been working. Hopefully had a couple of physical practices last week. Get some toughness back, get people healthy. And, yeah, we need to play well, and we need to win. And that's how you solve those problems. Mm-hmm. If we don't, it's just tougher and tougher as the season goes on. And we have another tough late-night road game,
right,
which could be a little chilly up in Lexington, Kentucky the following week. So it doesn't get easier, but I feel good about this game. Like we were talking before the show, if you look at Missouri, they're not that impressive to me.
They're 5-1,
yeah.
But they have only played three. They've only played three FBS schools,
right?
And
major conference.
Well, right. Major conference,
yeah.
Major conference,
yeah.
Schools. But I mean,
they've blown out their mid-major opposition,
right, right,
and then
right.
In the three major conference games, Boston College, Vanderbilt, and A&M,
yeah,
you had two highly competitive games
and a blowout loss.
And a blowout loss. I think it's totally fair to question. And look, Missouri has the chance to prove everybody wrong. You know, the folks that are doubting whether or not they really belong in this. Because I've had people tell me, you know, we talked about it yesterday with David. You know, if Missouri wins tomorrow and loses in Tuscaloosa and finishes the season 10-2, you can question whether
they have beaten.
Yeah, you can question whether or not, even at 6-2 in the SEC,
right,
you can question whether or not they'll have enough on the resume to justify a spot in the college football playoff. And I think if they were to lose tomorrow, or if they were to lose to Oklahoma in 2 weeks, I believe Arkansas is on the schedule as well, towards the end of the season. If they were to lose one of those games, it feels it feels virtually impossible for them to get there. So they can prove people, you know, don't think they're playoff caliber. They can win the next couple of games.
Well, they need to win games like this that they're favored in, though.
Right. Oh, sure,
absolutely,
right, absolutely. I mean, well, they need to win conference home games. I feel like if you're a team that wants to go to the college football playoff, it's bad news for Auburn. But if you're a team that wants to go to the college football playoff, you probably can't drop too many conference home games. Mm-hmm.
No,
because you're playing on the road, against really good teams every week, Coach. It's probably never been harder with the way teams rebuild every season now. Probably never been harder to go on the road and know what you have.
It's tough enough, but now, like you say, with the changes, it's even tougher.
That's one of the reasons we were talking earlier in the week. Like, one of the reasons A&M has a really intriguing draw the rest of the way is because they have a manageable road schedule in the conference. I think the Arkansas game was technically a road game.
It was. It was Arkansas's year to be the home team there at Jerry World.
And then the others I want to say are, is it State, Florida?
It's at Mississippi State this week, at South Carolina in 2 weeks, and then at Auburn the next to the last week of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that a lot of SEC teams are looking at what they're going to have to do on the road versus what A&M.
They probably have the most manageable road schedule of any team in the conference this year.
I mean, and that's one of the reasons, on top of the fact that they looked very impressive in their win over Missouri, handled Florida, pulled away in that game, and then Florida sort of rallied back. But, I mean, I keep mentioning A&M is a disastrous last 2 minutes against Notre Dame away from being undefeated and probably a top four team in the, maybe number four, maybe the number four team in the, like, if they beat Notre Dame, they're probably ranked ahead of everyone but the three undefeated teams that make up 1, 2, and 3 right now, Texas, Oregon, and Penn State. And maybe they'd be ahead of Penn State. Like, if you bake in a win over Notre Dame on top of everything else A&M's done. So that's a team flying under the radar a little bit. And look, and it could implode for them over the next couple of weeks. Do they have LSU in College Station next week?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
They've got LSU and Texas are the two teams coming in to College Station with those three road games that
you
mentioned.
How big, if both of those teams win tomorrow, how big does LSU A&M feel in College Station next week? Because those are two teams that are very much alive for the SEC championship game.
That's why I'm leaning at Arkansas tomorrow.
Ooh, you think?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. I think LSU maybe hard for them not to be thinking a little bit about the trip to A&M. But LSU Arkansas is always tight.
Mm-hmm. Coach Dunn, I've never been to Fayetteville for a game. I've done women's basketball there, but right. I've never been there for an Arkansas game. It's not usually mentioned when people talk about the most intimidating home field atmospheres in the conference or in the country, but it felt like Tennessee was up against the entire world a couple of weeks ago when the momentum started to swing a little bit and that stadium started. Like, you felt Tennessee's offense.
They are hungry. They are very, very hungry. And I mean, it's like if Auburn started winning, I mean, it's the crowds are already there, but the atmosphere goes up an even higher notch when they feel like, oh, something big's in their grasp.
But you saw an impact on the Tennessee offense in the second half of that game that you only see when you're talking about, the swamp at its peak or something like that. Like it felt like they couldn't, it was that sort of feeling. And I wonder if LSU's walking into that tomorrow night as well, because I think
they'll be ready. The fans, like we're saying, it's a tough place to play. First, back when I was going out there, it was hard to get there.
Yeah.
You had to fly in, and it took forever on these windy roads. The weather was usually a little chilly or cold. And, they had pretty good teams, and we always had good games, and the crowd could be intimidating.
One thing that's really been interesting is listen to LSU people talk about Arkansas. Arkansas fans feel like, oh, the battle for the boot, it's a big – LSU people, it's like way on down the line as far as big games for them. Even though there have been some great games in this series, I mean, they've got – the Alabama and the Ole Miss rivalry. I mean, they've got and even the the cross division matchup against Florida, and then the Auburn when they were playing Auburn every year. All those came ahead of Arkansas in the minds of LSU, of the LSU fan base.
Especially the ones they've been playing before Arkansas was in the conference.
Yes.
Right? Like, I mean, Alabama and Florida were yearly opponents of LSU for decades.
And Ole Miss.
And Ole Miss.
Yeah, forever.
I mean, those games.
The Billy Cannon, you know, I mean, it's like.
But there are, I mean, as we get further and further away from 1992, Bill, like, right there.
I
get it, too, because, I mean, but there are fans who think it was just like the same way with Auburn LSU, right, where it was like. It became a game that had to be played in the eyes of the fans that didn't remember.
This one is more to LSU fans, sort of the way Mississippi State is to Auburn. It's one, you've always played it, but you're just not as concerned about it. They don't feel like as much of a threat. Arkansas is more of a threat.
It's a much bigger game for Arkansas.
You know what it is?
It's like when the this is not a diss, I promise. But it's like the Rays probably consider the Yankees a rival.
Yes, and I doubt that the Yankees. I mean, they respect them. The Rays have, but the thing is, the Rays have taken things more away from the Yankees than Arkansas has from LSU.
Although Arkansas,
that's what Arkansas is looking to do now. I mean, it's been a struggle for Arkansas over the last decade.
Sure, but it's been a struggle for Arkansas against everybody in the conference.
I know, that's what I mean. Like, and because of that, it's tough for, I think, for LSU folks to get as excited about this. That's why I'm saying they've got A&M next week, and then their next game after that's Alabama.
Bill, I didn't think you were going to go, actually, the Rays are far more significant than...
Well, they are.
I get it, but, I mean, Arkansas, as we talked about when we previewed Auburn, Arkansas, like, there are, especially if you're able to go deeper into the 2000s or the 90s with these memories, like, there are some Arkansas football teams, like it's, I think if you remember Houston Nutt's best teams, if you can, like, I mean, it would be
Bobby's team.
Bobby Petrino, until the end of Petrino's run. Like, it's not all that shocking to see what's happening this season at Arkansas. If you've only known Arkansas as a doormat in the SEC because of what happened with the end of Bielema, well, most of Bielema and Chad Morris, you know, and like it, and the beginning of Pittman, like you would think that they're a program that's never going to have the resources to hang with good SEC programs, but they've been able to. I mean, they've gotten to the SEC championship game before.
They absolutely have. Well, I mean, and that's what Auburn and Hugh Freeze need to avoid right now. I mean, Auburn loses this ball game here. It's hard to imagine they're not going to have a fourth straight losing record, a fifth straight non-winning record, and then you're talking about kids that are being recruited who were in the sixth grade the last time Auburn was significant.
It's just like last season. You know, we were just talking about yesterday with Ferguson, how there are Auburn basketball players. Maybe this was on the podcast, but they're like, Auburn's not a novelty in men's basketball.
No, not anymore.
Because these players only know Auburn as a winner.
Right.
Like the kids Bruce Pearl is recruiting.
Right.
Like it's hard to believe, but like Pettiford was he in fifth grade when Auburn went to the Final Four? Like it's a fifth or sixth grade. It's not. Like these, it's a.
He was in seventh grade.
Seventh grade. Okay, but still, I mean, the thought is like, I mean, team's been winning a lot since he was in middle school, and that's going to be the case for, and the more you lose in football, the more you start to think, well, what does a 17-year-old know about what does he associate this program with? Like, and a lot of that is prisoner of the moment. It's weighed heavily on what have you done the last three years, the last five years.
Exactly.
All right, we need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you get your podcasts.
So come on in. We're just underway here on the Friday Drive.
Are we going to try Barrett?
We need to check. We'll check in with Barrett. I have not heard that we couldn't get him today. So, yeah, we'll check with him when we come back.
Hip pain is not to be taken lightly. It could be a sign of hip impingement. If pain, stiffness, or limping persists, see a hip...
888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan joined by Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. And now we're going to head to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our good friend Barrett Salee. Barrett, how you doing today, man?
I'm good. If I was a little younger, I could have spent quite a few nights at Skybar. But when I was there, it was the Blue Room.
Speaking of Skybar, we will be there next Friday as part of our we're on location a lot this season. Thanks to our pals at Bud Light and Skybar costume contest going on next Friday. So we'll be there to help preview
true
some
story at that
some
location,
Halloween action.
Which was Blue Room back in the day. I saw Vanilla Ice play.
Oh wow!
Mix-a-Lot play.
Vanilla Ice and Sir Mix-a-Lot, the '90s double.
You know what was funny? Vanilla Ice, that was in his like heavy metal days, and a tornado warning knocked out power, and we just sat there at the bar drinking, and Vanilla Ice was right there with us.
That location has some history. I mean, I go all the way back to the War Eagle Theater days, but hey, I'll tell you what. Speaking of history, yesterday we were downtown for tip off at Toomer's. From the new and I'm sure you rode by. I don't know how often you frequented the original War Eagle Supper Club. We were at the new one atop the Graduate downtown yesterday, and that was fabulous. Fabulous,
you know,
is not anything
I
would have ever. And
one.
This is no knock against John. John knows this, but I would have never described the Supper Club as fabulous before.
There are some nights that it is fabulous there.
Oh
like
yeah,
back
absolutely.
In Shot Bus, but.
I mean, people had fabulous times.
Oh yeah,
at the War Eagle Supper Club, and no,
I'm getting sticky feet, like shoes stuck to the floor, like thinking about this. I put my feet on the floor, and it felt like they stuck there.
Oh, it was
just talking about this.
The new location of the Supper Club at the Graduate. Yeah, we did the show there yesterday, and it's just it's fantastic. So check that out the next time you're in town, Barrett. And. And hopefully we'll get to see you there. But what a weekend we've got of college football coming up.
College football, Barrett, it's wonderful this year because it is so crazy. I mean, usually by this time of year, there is a team or just a few teams, and you know those are the only teams that have a shot to win it all. This year, I don't know that I could limit it to anywhere near 12 teams. I think everybody in the top 25 feels like they've got a shot of making the playoff and making a long run.
Yeah, you know what? It's like I keep thinking about it. It's like, okay, Texas right now is what Bama, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State typically are in the middle of the season,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's just Texas. And then everybody else is kind of like, throw your hands up in the air. Like, you want to make a case that Oregon's going to win a national championship? Sure. BYU, fine, totally. You know, it's just like there are so many teams. You know, I said this on Sunday on SiriusXM. It's like the weekends that are supposed to be bad have great games, and the weekends that are supposed to be great have equally as great games.
Yeah,
you know, you're just getting great content, great games nonstop, and it's why I think college football is a much more superior product to the NFL. You never know what you're going to get. And look, I hope that happens this weekend too, because you got some monster games, not just in the SEC, but even around the country too. I mean, it's just it's a great year for our sport, and I think part of it's the playoff, but I think part of it's just the fact that there's just a little more parity, you know, across the board. And I always go back to this, in the olden days, you know, when we were young, which is a long time ago, you know, you'd have to wait 3 years to start, right? Well, look at Eli Holstein. He was going to be a third stringer at Bama. He goes to Pittsburgh, and he lights it up. In the olden days, he'd be sitting on the bench in Tuscaloosa, mm-hmm. right? But it's like that all over the place. The depth isn't there at all of these schools because all of that depth is going somewhere else to play.
Yeah, speaking of Alabama, that game looms as – you know, it's not really an elimination game because I suppose the loser Saturday night could run the table and make an argument for the college football playoff at 10-2. But you don't feel like the loser tomorrow night is necessarily in great position to win the five remaining games on either of their schedules. So what are you thinking happens tomorrow night when Alabama plays Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. A 10-2 team, right? Like, one of those teams at best is going to be 10-2 because the loser, mm-hmm. you know, has to obviously. I went to Auburn. I can do math. You know, so I think with you never know what you're going to get in a 10-2 team, but it likely depends on the landscape, right? Like which spots are actually opening up. But I think almost an elimination game is the way to go about it. And look, I think Tennessee, I think, is a more complete football team, but I think from a matchup perspective, that's where really Alabama is going to get hurt because that offensive line is dreadful. I mean, poor Jalen Milroe still running for his life from last week against South Carolina. And now they're going to do that on the road in Neyland against, I think, the best front seven in the SEC. That's not going to go well. So, you know, Alabama to me it's so hard to trust them based on what we've seen. You know, even in the game, the big win over Georgia, the second half, they kind of sucked. It was like, well, you know, really they've had two great quarters in SEC play and then a great game up at Wisconsin. That's about it. I think Tennessee gets the job done. I don't think they're going to put an awful lot on Nico's shoulders because I don't think they feel like they're going to need to. As long as they can, you know, keep the score, keep Alabama at bay, put them in third and long situations, I think they feel very comfortable. And I think in reality, I think Josh Heupel views this Tennessee team as a better team. I don't think that really Alabama has that intimidation factor as they've had in years past. And certainly the matchup situation here, the big matchup that I think will determine the game, favors Tennessee in a big, big way.
That's really interesting to think about this, this matchup there in Knoxville. Speaking of 10-2 teams that might not make it, we'll go ahead and get your thoughts. I mean, Missouri is a 5-1 team, but I mean, they've struggled to win against two major conference schools and were blown out by the third they played. You know, Auburn's a team, it's 2-4. They feel like they should be better. Missouri's a team, it's 5-1, but they look like they probably shouldn't be 5-1. But if Missouri, even if Missouri wins this one, wins most of the rest, but say they lose to Alabama, which they I would think that's not unreasonable at all. I don't know that a 10-2 Missouri team with a blowout loss to Texas A&M and then a loss, especially if it's not a close one, to Alabama, I don't know that they'd have a great shot of making an argument to get into the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, well, and also A&M might be in that discussion too.
Yeah.
So that could play against them too. I mean, I just think Missouri, you know, I talked to Eli a couple weeks ago on my podcast, and this was when they were 4-0, and he was angry. He was like, look, we can't tackle, we can't run the football, and it's just not working out the way he had planned it. I'm like, dude, you're 4-0. And he's like, yeah, we still haven't played the way we need to play. And it turns out he was right, because we saw him go to Texas A&M and get smoked. I just think the upside for that team just really isn't there. They've struggled to replace Cody Schrader. They're not that sound tackling. And I think ultimately that's what led to the blowout loss to Texas A&M, and I think it's pretty much what's going to keep every game close at best, or maybe they get blown out in a lot of them. So I think, you know, you said Auburn feels like they probably should be better than 2-4, and I 100% agree with you, because it's like you want to shake Auburn and be like, why aren't you better? Because they're doing everything pretty well except for turnovers. And I know that's part of your DNA too, but it's like, just cut them down a little bit, right? Just cut them out a little bit, and Auburn can win a lot of football games. So I think ultimately that's what's going to happen. I think the bye week did them good, and they'll go up and beat Missouri. I think it says a lot that, like you said, a team with one loss against a team with four losses is only a 3-point favorite. I mean, I think that tells you all you need to know about what the real Missouri is, or at least what the people that do this for a living feel like the real Missouri is.
Well, the marquee game, obviously, you talked about it, Texas. It really does appear. It's Texas and then the rest in this league. Georgia can make a statement there. They have not been great the last couple of weeks, but I really wonder, Barrett, how much they were concentrated on Mississippi State last week with that trip to Austin coming up this Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it did look like they sleptwalked a little bit, but I mean, I think the biggest thing to me is, yeah, within a vacuum, they did look like they sleptwalked a little bit, but they looked like that a lot, right? They looked like that for four quarters against Kentucky, two quarters against Alabama, pretty much the entire Mississippi State game. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Auburn game kind of for a little while too, to me, I just kind of think that's what Georgia is. I mean, Georgia's one-dimensional. They don't run the football. And if you don't run the football, you're going to have a hard time to get going. You're going to have a hard time, you know, going on extended drives and stuff. So, yeah, maybe they were looking ahead, but I think just to me, if they were, they've led a problem that has lingered throughout the course of the season. Not, you know, they haven't had it, given themselves a chance to fix it. And ultimately, I think that's what's going to cost them in this Texas game is that, you know, Texas is, they can make you one dimensional. I don't care how good Carson Beck is. You put him on the road with no help from a running game, he's not going to be that successful. It's what happened against Kentucky. It's what happened against Alabama. So, Texas is one of the only teams in the country that doesn't look like it's had a flaw all year. You know, Oregon did the first couple of games, and they fixed it. So that's awesome. But Texas really hasn't had one, and I think that'll continue. I think they'll get the job done against Georgia.
You mentioned Carson Beck's struggles on the road relative to how he plays in Athens. I'm curious to see how the LSU offense looks when they go on the road to what felt like a hornet's nest a couple of weeks ago, Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Yeah, you know, I think for Arkansas, I love Travis Williams. You guys know him well, too. He's done a great job at Arkansas, but he has to do a great job at Arkansas because their offense just isn't giving them an awful lot. And I think LSU's in a situation now where they've kind of found their groove offensively, and they're going to put Arkansas in a situation where they're a little out of their comfort zone. You know, Taylen Green is okay. I think he's just sort of a solid quarterback, but nothing more than that. And if he's in a situation where he has to go throw for throw with Garrett Nussmeier, even if it's not like a 45-40 game, you know, I don't think he can do that. I think LSU's defense is good enough to get some stops against him. And I think offense, especially in the offensive line, LSU's gotten a lot better as the season goes on. So, I think that can, LSU's like really sneaky, right? Everyone talked about Texas A&M after they beat Missouri, and we know about the big dogs, and there's LSU just sitting there undefeated in the SEC, just going about their business, and I think that'll continue this week.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was wanting to ask is, right now, as we've said, it looks like Texas, then the rest. Who do you give the best chance of being the team that is likely to face Texas in the SEC title game?
Man, if Texas beats Georgia, Georgia would almost have to be out because the head-to-head tiebreaker losses to Texas and to Alabama would be a lot to overcome. Looking at Texas A&M's schedule, how cool would it be if you get Texas versus Texas A&M two weeks in a row?
Yeah, that could be.
It is very much a possibility right now because I look at Texas A&M's schedule. They're going to play in the SEC championship game. I mean, I firmly believe that. They are going to play in the SEC championship game.
The A&M schedule, we were talking about a little bit earlier, A&M looks to have a very favorable draw of road games playing Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Auburn, right? Like those are the three road games.
Yep.
You've got Texas and LSU at home.
LSU, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. Okay, let's play it out and say they lose to LSU and then go into the Texas game with one loss. I mean, there's a legit possibility that they could lose that and still play Texas again, right? Or win that and still play Texas again.
Yeah, I mean, it's not inconceivable at all that your the opponent is going to have two losses.
Yeah, I think it's probable at this point.
Yeah, that's one of the things. I mean, I don't think there are many folks that thought there would be, this kind of situation in the SEC or across the country, but you said it a little while ago. I mean, it's because of the transfer portal. And, we were talking with Jason Caldwell a couple of days ago, and he had firmly been of the belief that, well, the transfer portal is only going to help the best teams. The best are going to get better. Well, they're still able to get great players in the portal, but you're not able to hang on to your third team. You can't pay your third teamer as much as another team can pay them to be a first teamer, and kids want to play. So, I mean, the talent is spread around more.
The SEC championship game. Go ahead, Barrett.
The only thing that has not been helped is the depth on great teams.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, the middle of the road teams are better. The lower tier teams are better. The FCS teams are better because all of the good players are actually getting places to play instead of sitting on a bench at a Georgia or Alabama, right? Like the talent pool is now, you know, spreading itself out to every team. And as a result, you've got better teams around the country. The only drawback has been the depth on the elite football teams, because all those dudes are going somewhere else to play. Mm-hmm.
The SEC championship game, dark horse, and we're up against it, so we probably need to take a break here. But it's the if LSU can win tomorrow, I feel like they mm-hmm. could go. They can go 1-1 in the A&M and Alabama games, and still potentially yeah. make the SEC championship game as a 7-1
sure,
team.
Sure, if they're 7-1, I think they're in.
Yeah, and seven, yep. I mean, now they don't want to be in a beauty pageant with eight. Like if the 7-1 includes a loss to A&M, you don't want to be, you know, in a tiebreaker situation with them or Alabama at 7. True. Like they're going to need that. You know, they're going to need to hope that the team that, if they're 7-1, they're going to need to hope that the team that beats them is not the team that they're facing off in a tiebreaker scenario. Otherwise, and look, and they could win all three of these games. That's the other thing.
Oh, yeah. I was talking to some folks at the SEC office. I was like, you better hope the verbiage of your tiebreaker situation has been cleared by lawyers.
Yeah.
Because the last thing you need is someone to find a loophole like Dan Lanning did last week.
Yeah, there's a very good chance that those tiebreakers are going to be taken. They're going to be in effect, and hopefully you don't have to go too far down that list, but yeah, that's great. Barrett, yeah, we are up against it. Really appreciate it. Let everybody know what you got going and how they can keep up with it all.
Yeah, College Football Smothered and Covered, daily podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, all those places. You can read my stuff at Outkick. You can also listen on Sunday morning, myself and Tom Luganville on SiriusXM 84. Luke is doing the Stanford game, so he will be tired, hungover
yes,
mess
will.
On Sunday morning. So that makes good for great radio.
Oh, you're not kidding. Enjoy it, Barrett. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Thanks, y'all.
All right, Barrett Salih joining us, as he does most Fridays. We appreciate him giving us a little bit of time. We're way behind, but wanted to get as much as we could from Barrett. Come on in and join us now. We'll open the phone lines, 334-321-1390, here on the Friday Drive. Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday. Bill, Dan, and Don Dunn here in the studio. We'd love for you to join in. As we mentioned a while ago, they were warming up, and they're hot here early on in the National League Championship Series. Runs on the board. I mean, the Mets with three in the first. The Dodgers answer with a run in the top of the second. 3-1 Mets going to the bottom of the second inning in an elimination game for the Mets. I mean, the Mets are facing elimination, trying to avoid at least being eliminated at home.
Potentially Pete Alonso's final game as a New York Met, right? The offseason uncertain. I mean, there was that game in the elimination series against the Brewers when there was the question of whether or not it was Pete Alonso's final game. He hits a home run that helps. That helps decide it, and now yeah, with the Mets needing to, I mean they badly need they badly need a strong start in this one, and they got it.
Yeah, they'd have to come back from 3-1, which is not happened very often in the history of Major.
Well, no, they have to come back from down 3-1 as it is now.
That's what they're faced with now.
But I thought a strong start was important for the Mets because you didn't want to let Flaherty cruise and let the Dodgers get into that bullpen striking early. You know, Lindor getting on base and was it Nimmo? I think Nimmo and Lindor getting on base and Alonso getting the home run across. Like, that's it changed the dynamic of the game a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we'll see. I mean, still plenty of time for the Dodgers who have, I mean, they have really been hitting the ball. They've been held to less than is it 8 or 9 once? I mean, they scored 3 in game 2 and they lost 7-3. They scored 9 or better in the other games? 9 zip. It was 10-2 and maybe only 8 in game 3. But, I mean, they have really been swinging the bats well.
Yeah, I mean, and Otani's warming up, but it was Mookie nearly hitting the cycle. Muncy is just an impossible out of late. You know, he's drawn a lot of walks.
When he's hot, he's almost
He's been battling, you know, he's been battling different physical ailments this year.
Oh,
but
yeah.
when he's right, he's a really tough out in the playoffs. Doesn't swing at stuff that's not in the strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's got that you know, it feels like a superpower almost to know if, you know, if, you know, what you've seen some veteran hitters growing up. I always associate a Beltran with that towards the end, although it turned out there may have been, you know, other stuff going on. But that ability to just, you know, to lay off,
well,
even borderline
that, like, and again, I'm still, look, I'm old school to a point, but I still am a proponent of an electronic strike zone. But one of the things that is, it's a fact that the proven hitters who have shown that they have good knowledge of the strike zone, they'll probably get, they get the benefit of the doubt. You take a pitch that's close, umpires realize, oh, this guy really knows the strike zone, and he'll get a break and get a ball called instead of a strike.
Well, Muncy, if he's getting that kind of respect from umpires, he deserves it because,
sure.
Yeah, he's somebody who's just, yeah, of late, really tough for the opposing team.
All right, and then coming up a little later, and you should be able to hear it right here on ESPN 106.7, Game 4 of the ALCS between the Yankees and the Guardians. Yankees within an out last night of going up 3-0, but a two-out home run to send it to extras, and then a two-run homer in the bottom of the 10th. And the Guardians are very much alive, down 2-1, heading into tonight's Game 4 in Cleveland. So that should be coming up on ESPN 106.7. Coming up a little later on, we mentioned it earlier, though, 6:30 over on Wings 94.3. It will be Auburn High and Carver with the Tigers looking to wrap up the region title with a win tonight. Meanwhile, on AU 100, it will be Lee Scott and Glenwood, a longtime matchup, but for the first time playing as AHSAA members. And each of those games, pregame 6:30 and kick at 7 o'clock. We'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Love for you to join us here on the Friday Drive.
It's time to plan your next great meal at Acre in Auburn. Chef
AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Final few minutes of hour number one here on the Friday Drive. Bill, Don, and Dan. Bill, Dan, and Don.
Bill, Dan, and Don.
That sounds like an old group, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Don, I suggested, I think on the Observer Show, I suggested your nickname should be Law and Order.
Yeah.
Because of, you know why, Bill?
Don Dunn.
that's absolutely right. Law and Order, my man.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Now,
yeah.
Looking forward to, on top of the baseball, which, you know, could be, you know, we could get some more high-stakes baseball games this weekend, but I mean, just an awesome slate of college football tomorrow.
Also want to talk, and we don't have a whole lot of time left this hour, but love to hear from some folks that were at tip-off at Toomer's last night. I mean, what a crowd there was in downtown Auburn. We tried to get from one side to the other to see Matt and Ariel and Kennedy, and it took us a while getting through that mass of humanity that there was. They had a great job with big screens, though, all around where you could see, you know, the competition.
I took in the sights and sounds for a few minutes and thought, ooh, this crowd is, you know, like, if, you know, the folks up close and a couple of our colleagues, you know, in the media who were
Brandon O'Reilly on the way trying to navigate across the street.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, some of those folks, you know, it was a great time. I hope it becomes a regular occurrence, a tradition here in the community to do that every basketball season. But you're right, a huge crowd of people downtown for that thing last night.
We were, as a matter of fact, we actually had a pretty good view of the actual action while the big screens were on there during the slam dunk contest to see Ja'Kai Howard leap Aubie and Bruce Pearl. Yeah. On a dunk. Yeah, he does have some hops.
He's excited. I still wonder if, you know, especially on a team this veteran-laden,
right.
I do wonder if he's going to have the luxury of you know, letting his basketball skills sort of develop over the course of this year without having to play a lot and certainly not very much high leverage, he could overperform. And, you know, if he start pushing, you know, guys at the three or the four for minutes, depending on where he fits. But, yeah, it's very exciting, the potential of a guy who can do stuff like that.
Yeah. So if you were there or, you know, you had any thoughts on that, we'd, you know, love to hear those in hour number two.
I want to talk a little bit about Tony Bennett's retirement, too, yeah. Because that's a
that was out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, and then when you hear him talk.
Here we are right on the eve of the season.
Well, when you hear him speak today and he talks about the state of college athletics, it becomes a little less shocking for a coach to walk away. We could talk a little bit about some of the points he made in his farewell earlier today.
All right, we'll do that, and we'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. We're right back with hour number two of the Friday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Friday Drive, final hour of the week. And we've got quite a bit to get to. We want to talk more about the big ball games this weekend in Auburn, Missouri, and we've talked about playoff baseball. We'll keep you updated on that. We'd love for you to join in, give us your thoughts, questions, comments as well. You can do so by calling the drive at 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hour number two of the drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. It's Bill, Dan, and Don, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. Dan mentioned, and I had not seen all the comments yesterday, really surprising to hear that Tony Bennett, the Virginia basketball coach, stepping down. And, I mean, the season's about to start, of course. I mean, all the excitement here with tip-off at Toomers. I mean, you've got exhibition games that are going to be played here in the next week or so. The season getting started in just a couple of weeks. So it is very surprising timing. I had not seen all the comments, but when I see the comments, it shouldn't be a shock. Another longtime coach stepping down. Tony Bennett saying because of the state of college athletics.
Yeah, Tony Bennett, a surprise announcement yesterday from the university that he was going to have his retirement speech, and he was going to retire effective immediately and give a farewell address earlier today. It's some interesting comments from a coach with his resume and with his cachet to bemoan the state of the industry to this degree. And I thought the most telling quote, and he prefaces by saying, I think it's right for players, student athletes to receive revenue, don't mistake me, but the game and college athletics is not in a healthy spot. It needs to change. There's got to be collective bargaining. There's got to be a restriction on the salary pool that teams can spend, and there has to be transfer regulation, unquote. That those seem like, I mean, and those would be pretty sweeping changes to where things are currently, to have a system where not just are players employees, but they would be drawing from a set salary cap that teams were not allowed to go over. But I think that, you know, as we were talking off the air, it sounds like there are folks that would agree that's probably the best thing for competition moving forward, if there's any way to enact a plan like that.
I doubt that if you poll the coaches and they didn't have to, they weren't concerned about who knew who said what, that the majority, and it probably would be a pretty strong majority of them, would go along with what Bennett said. I mean, you've already seen some longtime older coaches step down for this. I thought it was really interesting when Tony Bennett said, the hardest thing to say is when I looked at myself and realized I'm no longer the best coach to lead this program in this current environment. He said, if you're going to do it, you got to be all in. If you do it half-hearted, it's not fair to the university and these young men. It's looking at it. It's what made me step down.
We've wondered before, especially coaches that have a system where they want to develop. I mean, Jim Boeheim talked about this. Mm-hmm. When you develop players in your system over multiple seasons, the prospect of having to reboot your roster every year and have, you know, have it be a fairly routine occurrence that everyone who contributed for you moved on to something else, either for more playing time or for a bigger opportunity somewhere else, or you know, for one reason or another. But the thought of constantly having to reshuffle, you know, I think that's a, not to mention what you have to do to get top level talent.
Right.
I think it was a it was something that was incompatible with, you know, who Tony Bennett, you know, the coach that Tony Bennett wants to be.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you wonder what other coaches might be feeling the same way. And you can't not think about what Hugh Freeze has talked about. Hugh Freeze has talked about his philosophy is he's going to build it. He wants to build it from recruits. He wants to build it from recruits, develop those recruits, and then take and plug in, if need be, from the transfer portal. Whereas you see other coaches that have just gone, you know, right head on, full speed into the, that's fine, just we will get as many players as we can each year and reshuffle. I mean, Ole Miss has been doing that, and it's worked. It's worked there for Lane Kiffin. So, you know, so you wonder all around the country in multiple sports how many coaches that have been very successful are going to go, I'm not cut out for this.
But I wonder if Lane Kiffin would even welcome a system in place that's sort of what Tony Bennett is talking about, where there's
Some restriction, where there's some parameters,
yeah, like even
some
the
guidelines,
even
some
the even the coaches that
caps.
Have, even coaches that have thrived in this atmosphere might feel like they could still be better coaches than their opposition if everybody was playing on a level playing field and the rules were kind of the same for all people involved. So yeah, I think there's. You know,
because it's not going to, I mean, the thing is,
and yes,
players aren't going to be asking for less and less and less as we go further and further down the road.
And maybe we're going at this the wrong way. And when Tony Bennett retires, we should be celebrating because of the 2019 Final Four. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure maybe some people are like, that's the correct angle of the Tony Bennett retirement is, you know, that, you know, we should be talking about the.
Yeah, well, I read quite a few comments on message boards. They still double dribbled.
I'm sure. Yeah. Although, as I implore, I mean, he double dribbled, but Bryce was also deliberately fouling the guy. Like
right.
There are two.
Call the foul.
There are two awful missed calls there, and yet it puts Virginia in a position where they can win that game. But no, that's I think on the point of, and you know, it's everybody's got an idea as far as how to fix, you know, the right path forward for college
athletics.
Well,
I don't know that Tony Bennett had an idea of how to fix it. He just said there's got to be something. Something's got to be put in here.
I mean, but I think he's probably right about all three of those things. Like, I think that when he talks about, and he also spoke a little bit about, and this refers to more behind the scenes stuff when he talks about wanting to cut back on agent involvement.
Yeah, the limits. He said there's got to be some limits on the agent involvement.
I have no idea like how involved he, you know, like, you know, what's going on back there. But the with Tony Bennett, like. The first 3 points, the point of the revenue sharing or collective bargaining plus a cap of some kind and restrictions on the transfer portal, like those do feel like they would be, at least at the coaching class and the administrative class, they'd be fairly popular reforms within the within the industry.
Yeah, I mean, we'd love to hear from you. I mean, we're obviously a surprise when someone like this steps down, especially as close as it is to the season. So we'd love your thoughts on that, on anything you want to talk about sports-wise. What are your thoughts on Auburn, Missouri tomorrow? Tigers, after an open week, they got in just 2 days of practice last week. And then, but Coach Freeze seemed to be very pleased with that. Will Auburn, will they commit to the run more? Hugh Freeze sure sounded like that this week at his weekly press conference and during Tiger Talk. that he's lamenting the fact that they haven't run the ball more up to this point, given Jarquez Hunter the ball more up to this point.
Yeah, Bill, I agree. They have to run the ball tomorrow. They need to run the ball tomorrow. It helps so many other phases of the game if they can get the running game going. So I look for them to run the ball more. I really do.
There are ways to be a successful offense throwing it 45, 50 times a game, or throwing it 40 times a game and running your quarterback 15 to 20 other times a game. It just feels like this team
is better suited.
Yeah, it's not necessarily running. And maybe Hugh Freeze will have a team someday at Auburn where you want the quarterback throwing it 40 times and you want the quarterback running it 20 times and you feel rock solid about the pass protection on the offensive line. But this team, right? If you're playing the hand that you've been dealt, like the way to play with this team would be to probably lean on not just Jarquez, because I feel like that's a mistake people make too. Jarquez has been outstanding, but Damari Alston has made a very compelling case for carries as well. Like, I just think the lack of attention to the running back position has probably been an oversight by this offense, and there was more of it against Georgia in the first three quarters. But I would think that's something that's really gotta, like, that's got to become more of a feature of the offense in these final six games.
Auburn has not had a game against a major conference school this year in which their running backs have had 30 carries, 30 touches. I mean, that means so there have not been 30 called runs to the backs in a major game. And, you know, one of the things Auburn has struggled with is time of possession.
Yeah.
If you can run the ball, you can improve that time of possession. You keep the ball away from the other offense.
And that's sometimes the best defense.
If you isolate the four major conference games, Auburn's only had 20-plus carries by the running backs once. Like if you look at the four games Auburn's played against major conference, Jarquez and Damari.
I said touches. I was including every way of even getting the ball has been under 30.
But if we're talking called runs to Jarquez and Damari, 14 in the Cal game, 15 in the Arkansas game, 24 in the Oklahoma game, and 17 against Georgia. And that's Jarquez and Damari combined. Mm-hmm. Like I was combining
Cobb as well. I was putting anybody in there.
If Jarquez were getting 15 carries a game, but it was part of
you get 15, you got 10, and then you've got eight mm-hmm. for your third guy. You know, you're getting that's getting you 33 to 35 running back, touches, rushes a game. That would be much, I think. Especially with the talent that Auburn has, I think he'd be much, much better off doing that. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar.
We got Spectre hanging on. What's up, Spectre?
Hey, guys. Let me ask y'all, where does Missouri's running defense rank in the SEC?
It's interesting. They appear to be pretty solid, but then you look really inside the numbers. So they're eighth statistically in the conference, but Texas A&M ran for 250-plus against them. So, I mean, when they have played a team, they've only played one team that really tried to run the ball against them, and A&M ran it all over them.
Yeah. You think we are better than A&M at running?
I think Auburn's got as good or better talent at the running back spot, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think A&M's probably better at the line of scrimmage than Auburn. I think they're better. A&M's better at the line of scrimmage than a lot of teams in most teams in college football. But I think that Auburn's probably better at running the football than Boston College or Vanderbilt, and so it's closer to A&M than anyone else Missouri has faced this year.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's the line of scrimmage.
I think Auburn is better suited, though. Their offensive line is better suited to run blocking than they are pass blocking.
Well, it's worked out that way so far. But let me ask y'all, if they shut down our run or limit it, what do you think is going to happen then?
I think Auburn's in trouble if that's the case. If they shut down the run,
I think this Auburn team this season is going to be in trouble against any team that's good enough to shut down the run game. Because I mean, Auburn's still going to try to throw the football, but if teams can play if they can play the pass while also keeping Auburn in check with the run, then I don't really know what move Hugh Freeze has to try to win those games.
Do you guys find it surprising that we're midway through the second Freeze season that we don't have a developed quarterback?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, I think Peyton's numbers look pretty good, but Auburn has shot themselves in the foot, not just with turnovers, but with penalties and things. Auburn statistically looks like a pretty good offense. It's just they keep making the kinds of mistakes that prevent them from scoring. So I think Peyton's better than he was a year ago.
You might be right about throwing interceptions, but he still does not have the ability to read a defense, and he has a brain lock sometimes, just like on that 4th-and-1. I mean, that was definitely on him.
I think he may think too much at times.
To me, more concerning than the overthinking in crucial moments has been, as a caller mentioned earlier. And again, I'm not advocating for Auburn to play somebody else other than Peyton at quarterback, but it does feel like at times and probably too often, it just feels like everything's a step late, right? It's a half measure off beat, and something like that can be.
And that could be because of thinking. I mean, you want to get to the point where you just react, right. And you just do it. You don't have to think and second guess yourself and then try to do something, because you're probably too late then.
I mean, I do think it's possible, Spectre, that there were times when, especially against lesser Big Ten competition, there were times when maybe stuff would have worked. And when you get to the SEC and you're trying it against even Arkansas, but certainly when you're doing it against good SEC defenses, that stuff's not going to work.
Yeah, I'm pulling for Auburn. I hope they win this game, find some way to win it. I guess what I really need is some sunshine pumping from that guy from the Southwest. Yeah, maybe he'll call in and pump me up.
All right, Spectre. All right,
later.
All right, just as an example, I'm looking through the SEC stats this week. Auburn as a team is 6th in the SEC in pass efficiency, ahead of Georgia, ahead of LSU, ahead of Tennessee. Those are the three teams behind them. So, I mean, the numbers would say Auburn's pretty good at throwing the ball. They're in the upper third of the SEC. They're right there. As a matter of fact, it's very close between Auburn and Florida. It's funny, Vandy is 4th. In the SEC in pass efficiency. I mean, but it's Alabama, Texas, Ole Miss, Vandy, Florida, and Auburn are your top schools in pass efficiency. So it's not as though there aren't plays that are working and Auburn's making some. They just, the consistency is what's been, just hasn't been there.
Something else that's got to be totally frustrating for Auburn amid this 2-4 start is that, yes, there's been, Tuttle's been battling, but I mean, for the most part, the guys you would have tabbed as your most important players, they've been healthy for these six games. Like, and that's part of the reason why you feel like Auburn's close. And if you remove some of these critical pieces because of injury, you're probably not going to feel like Auburn's as close as they are right now to breaking through. So it's about keeping the most important guys available and hoping that they can put it together next week, because you do. I mean, seeing Auburn play, Georgia got away from them, but the other three were games where you felt like Auburn was, punch for punch, maybe even ahead on the scorecards. But that's not how
they got to get over the hump.
They don't go to the scorecards.
Games. Well, it's not horseshoes. Close doesn't count. And that's what Auburn's been this year. I mean, when you look at a team that is in the upper third of the SEC in passing efficiency and is 3rd in the SEC in yards per rush, you would think, oh, this team's got a really good offense, but Auburn's struggling in these big ball games.
We're
running behind. Need to get to our first break. Right back with more of your phone calls here on the Friday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
Drive here on this Friday, 24 minutes after 5 o'clock. Well, it looks like the National League Championship Series is going to go back to L.A. because the Mets have jumped all over Jack Flaherty and the Dodgers. They lead 8-1 as the Dodgers now bat in the top of the fourth.
This is why that Walker Buehler start the other day was so important, huge. Because you didn't want to put the pressure on Yamamoto and Flaherty to both be perfect. You thought, especially the second time they see the team, one of them might get touched up a little bit. And the Mets are getting to Jack Flaherty today.
Yeah, of course. I mean, all the Dodgers have to do is win one game out of the two possible in L.A. Let's get back to the drive hotline, 334-321-1390. And Brian is up next. Hey, Brian.
Wanted to ask a question to the group. Do we feel like we, not taking away the record, are we a better team than last year?
Yes. I mean, last year's team was inconsistent, though, right? Like, if you're thinking about last year's team, are you thinking about the team that took Georgia and Alabama into the fourth quarter at Jordan-Hare? Are you thinking about the team that was completely deep-fried in Baton Rouge coming off a bye week? You think about the team that lost at home to New Mexico State by multiple scores? Like I would say overall, even with a losing – like, Auburn hasn't been – I mean, the worst loss is Georgia – and that was a close game, you know, going – I mean, it's an 11-point game when you mess up the fourth and one to start the fourth quarter. I think Auburn is realistically close to being 5-1, but they're not 5-1 for a reason. But I would say, yeah, I mean, if you put the win-loss record aside and base it on the eyeball test, I think this team is better than last year.
I agree. Now, they need to start showing it on the field. Or I mean, if they don't get a win and you lose the team, then maybe by the end of the year, I don't think they are. But I believe as a group, yes, this team is better.
Feels like things are easier for the offense this year on a play-for-play basis than they were last year.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would agree with both of you. I think this team is more talented and you know, obviously younger. But I guess the reason I ask that is because, like, to me, again, you know, Phillip Montgomery got a lot of blame last year. And honestly, I didn't really think he was that bad of a coordinator. I was a little bit worried when we got rid of him that, you know, we weren't going to have the continuity going into a second season. And I'm not saying Freeze is doing a bad job. That doesn't have anything to do with it. But I feel like the one thing that we're missing again this year is, again, and I know we've been talking about this as ad nauseum, is the running game. To me, we ran the ball more last year, and we were more successful. Peyton ran the ball more. Jarquez ran the ball more, and we were more successful. And I just don't feel like we're doing that this year. It's just really odd to me.
No, you're right. You're absolutely not the only one. Everybody has been wondering, and Hugh has talked that a good bit. Since the Georgia game, that's why tomorrow is going to be so interesting to see, do they commit to the run? Do they come out and say, all right, Missouri, we're going to run it. Let's see you stop it.
Yeah, I do think, you know, I don't know if it could just be a bad burrito, but I do think we win tomorrow for whatever reason. I don't have anything to go off other than just, I don't know, maybe I've got my hopes back up after having a week off.
I think it's real. I like the 11 o'clock start too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so we'll see. I know that I'm going to be very extremely upset if I don't see, like you guys said, with us having at least 30 touches to, you know, spread around on the running backs, including passing. You know, it's just if we don't do that, I think we need to have investigations.
Brian, I think if Auburn were playing a better team tomorrow, like I'd probably be, you know, a lot more pessimistic about the chances, but I think some of this is sort of an emperor has no clothes deal with Missouri. Mm-hmm. Like I want to know if they're 5-1, but I mean, do they, you know, are they going to be a team we're talking about as a playoff team 5 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now, or are they going to be a team that loses, you know, to Bama and or Oklahoma and or Arkansas as well? And it's not gonna, you know, it'll seem like a big moment now. I mean, look, I mean, don't come back 2-5. You know what I mean? The alternative, but it's I think some of it might be, you know, Missouri's still got a lot to prove.
Yeah, and I agree. I think last statement, and I'll let you guys go. But I think we need to win one. I think if we can get over one, I think all of our games are winnable, including Alabama. It's just a matter of which team shows up and if we can get over that hump, honestly.
I agree. And they need to get over it as quickly as possible.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Amen to that. Thanks, guys.
Great stuff, Brian. Thank you. Thanks for the call. 334-321-1390. And Jeremy is up next. Hey, Jeremy.
Y'all were just touching on it a little bit. Like, any thoughts that the same Missouri that was in College Station the other day is the same one that we're going to get tomorrow? You better wad that up and throw it out the window.
Yeah, I don't expect that.
We remember what Kentucky looked like in week one, and everybody was wondering, how are they ever going to win a ball game? And then they turned around and almost should have knocked off Georgia the next week. Like, this is not – all of these teams are too closely grouped together to be able to take a one-off game like that when you have probably your worst day on the same day that the other team is having their best day and expect that to be the way they're going to look the rest of the year.
No, I don't expect – I mean, it's obviously not – they're not in the hostile environment. They're back at home, but I still don't think there's that much difference in these two teams talent wise.
Yeah, but I'd say if you were just talking about the A&M game, that would be one thing. But I think the fact that even though Missouri won those games, the fact that the Boston College game was, and the offense got on track in the second half, but they're down 14-3 early at home to Boston College, and they were fortunate to beat Vanderbilt at home in an overtime game. It's not like I would agree. Like, if you're just looking at stats from the Texas A&M game and saying, well, based on the A&M game, Auburn can do this or Auburn can do that, that is misguided. But skepticism of a Missouri team that has played three major conference opponents and hasn't really looked all that impressive in any of those games, I think is justifiable.
I don't think there's anything scary about this Missouri team.
Right.
But I also know, like, you're talking about a Boston College team that, look, I wanted us to hire Bill O'Brien. I think that's about as well coached of a football team as you'll see. We see that Vandy's no joke. The fact that they took Missouri to overtime, like that, you know, if you look at Vandy now, you're like, well, they probably should take Missouri to overtime. And that's where it's going to entirely come down to penalties, execution, and turnovers, right?
Yep.
Like that. That's what we're looking at. It's football. And at the end of the day, that's what every football game comes down to. The question about Jarquez, I don't think it's a matter of how many touches. He definitely needs to touch the ball more. But you can't just be running zone read and just say we're just going to give it to him instead of the quarterback keeping it and expect that to work out. Like we've been saying it. You're going to have to be creative in the run game.
Oh, I agree.
Counter plays, trap plays. If we think we can just line up and run zone read or run power all day against that Missouri team, I don't think that's going
to
work.
No, and Peyton Thorne's going to help with his legs, and that's something Missouri has struggled with this year, is quarterbacks who can run it a little, and I think Peyton's is as good as any quarterback they faced as far as running the ball.
Although I'll say this, Jeremy, like, I don't know if a lack of creativity has been as much of a problem as just sort of an overemphasis on the pass and letting the quarterback shoulder too much of the load in the run game. Like, I think they've done a good job of getting Jarquez and Damari the ball in ways that don't feel repetitive, don't feel like, you know, the same play over and over. It's just a matter of seeing it happen more.
Yeah, there's a few outside sweeps that we've run where it almost looks like student body right, where you've got both guards pulling and trying to get to the outside, and some of those plays have been successful. But like you've just got to incorporate some split zone and some counter plays to help slow the flow, if anything. That's one reason that Peyton Thorne's legs are successful when he keeps it, is it's some heavy flow going to those running backs and out of that formation and out of that look. And there are ways you can get the ball to the running backs that counter that flow. And we don't do it. I hope we do.
I do too. That's, again, it's going to be really interesting because, you know, Dan, you mentioned it a day or so ago that, you know, last year Auburn was really disappointing coming off the open date. All right, this year, I mean, it's really critical to see, you know, here's what you're going to see in the second half. You're going to get a good opportunity here, and it's a Missouri team that no, I mean it's not a cakewalk, but I mean I think it's a Missouri team that Auburn should feel like if they play their best game, they should be able to go in there and win.
Well, I think so too. I don't think this feels like this one doesn't feel hopeless.
No.
For Auburn, where you need not just your best game, but you know a lot of luck on your side.
Do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. Protect the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's more daylight between these two teams in the win-loss record than there is on the field, yes. And that you know we'll find out tomorrow how right I am about that. But mm-hmm. but I get the feeling. Yeah, these two teams. If you played, you know, Hugh Freeze likes to talk about. You know, these two teams played 10 times. You know, what would I think? I feel like if these two teams played 10, my guess going into this game is that if these two teams played 10 times, most of them would be pretty close. We'll see what that looks like tomorrow. If one team is clearly better on both sides of the ball than the other, maybe you recalculate that formula.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in here on the Friday Drive.
Hi, Jerry here from University Ace Hardware.
I'm with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Friday. And right back to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Mitch is next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Beautiful day down here in Northwest Florida.
Yeah, likewise here.
All right. Dan. Do you know where Nick's Seafood Restaurant is in between Niceville and Freeport on Highway 20?
Yeah, of course. Nick's it's an institution in that part. Is he an Auburn guy?
Yeah, big
Auburn guy. He's got some Auburn merch on the walls. Really, really good. I seem to remember like scallops and oysters and stuff. Yeah, I mean he's doing the blue crab claws. I know Bill, you're a blue crab claw guy, right? Like I mean some real good seafood.
Well, the reason I brought him up is because yesterday you guys were at the supper club and I didn't get a chance to call in, but I think one of your last callers was talking about did the Velcro Pygmies play?
Right.
well, the funny thing is the Velcro Pygmies have played at Nick's a few times when they have this big bonfire.
Huh. Oh, yeah, the bonfire.
On the weekends, yeah, because it'll be on the marquee. It's like Velcro Pygmies. I was like, oh, my God. I saw them in the 90s at the War Eagle Supper Club. They've got to be as old or older than I am, and I'm in my 50s. So that was just funny when the guy brought up the Velcro Pygmies. But, still hadn't been to Nick's. When we first moved down here, we were gonna go over there, but the pandemic hit and all that stuff, and so we never got over there. But anyway,
now I'm glad you mentioned. You know what? That's an Auburn guy, and that's a restaurant. Yeah. You know, my neck of the woods doesn't get mentioned enough up here. But yeah, no, Nick's is if you're going down to Destin, Miramar Beach, 38, something like that, like right before you get to it's almost exactly halfway between the toll bridge to Destin and the bridge to South Walton, 331. It's on the Niceville side, between right on the Niceville Freeport border. Nick's and some outdoor seating right there on the water, and it's that place is outstanding.
Yeah, I pass by it at least two or three times a week going to Destin because I go that route. So anyway, but speaking of the World Supper Club, I Googled it. See what they had written about and everything, and I'd forgotten that I saw River Phoenix at the War Eagle Supper Club in the 90s. And I can't remember exactly when it was, but and then I also found out or remembered.
Was he performing with like music, or was he just he was just there hanging out?
No, he was there performing.
Oh,
with
wow.
The band. Yeah, I found in a little article there's a documentary or something to call something like The Last Night at the Viper Room, because that's where, you know, he OD'd and died. But, yeah, in there it starts out that he walked into a bar in Gainesville in 1989 and ordered a beer, and they didn't card him or anything because he was so well-known from Stand By Me. But, yeah, and his first love was music. But, yeah, I saw him at the War Eagle Supper Club, and I think it was after that movie that had Corey Feldman in him and, oh, I can't remember the female's name. Or wait, no, Corey Feldman and Corey Haim were in it. He may not have been in it, but anyway.
The one with the vampires?
Yeah, well, it's amazing. It's amazing some of the folks who came through the old Supper Club. No question about it.
Yeah. But he passed away on Halloween in 1993, so it'll be 31 years ago that he left us. Yeah, I know. It's amazing. But that's all I had, guys. War Eagle.
All right, Mitch. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. Who do we have up next?
Got I believe Rain Man.
Rain Man
is on the line. What's up, Rain Man?
Hey, Rain Man.
Oh, hello. It was a lovely day today.
Yes, indeed.
Indeed. I'm going to tell you why I think we have a chance to win this weekend, which I would not have said, you know, a couple weeks ago and recently. Part of it is the week off and some rest, but part of it is I did a deep dive into these two teams statistically. I threw out the garbage and I looked at the Power Five, and they are remarkably close in every real category except two. They're close in rushing yards, passing yards, yards allowed, total yards, all of it. But there were two places there was a significant difference.
All right.
One of them is points per game. 15.5 points per game is what our offense scores against Power Five competition. They were 22.3, and that's 6.8, so if you allow me to round, I'm going to say 7.
Right.
They're outscoring us by a touchdown. Despite all the other total yards and everything else being within, I mean like 10 yards, total yards per game for each offense. That we outgained them by 10 yards a game, but they outscore us by a touchdown. The other one was turnover margin. They are plus 0.68. We are minus 2.25. If we don't out-turn over our opponent two or three times more than they turn it over and we run the ball and control the clock, we can play with a lot of teams that have already beaten us probably. It really just comes down to that. And I think part of it is recognizing we can't let our quarterback throw it 35 times. It's just too many opportunities to put it in the wrong hands.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Got to run the ball and control the clock.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Keep our offense on the field and theirs on the sideline, and we can be in this to the end and have a shot. That's really it. It seems too simple, but that's really the major difference in these two teams is they don't turn it over three times a game, and we do.
Well, Auburn did. Yeah, Auburn did early. I mean, there's really you're right. I mean, you look at these two teams, and like I've said, Missouri's a 5-1 team that probably – That probably could be much worse. Auburn's a 2-4 team that should be better.
Should be better.
Yeah.
And, you know, we didn't turn it over against Georgia, and we still lost. But that's just Georgia being better than us. But we found a way not to turn it over for that one game. At least I can't remember a turnover in it. For us, anyway.
No,
you're
right.
I don't remember them having
one.
I don't think anybody had a turnover in the game. But if we don't turn it over, we got a chance this week and for several more the rest of this year.
I agree with you, Rayman.
Hey, you guys have a good weekend. Let's hope it works out Saturday.
Hope so. Appreciate the call. All right, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. We've got somebody holding.
Yeah, I think we have John on hold. He can.
Yeah, John, hang on. We'll be right back with your call, and you can get in line behind him. 334-321-1390 here for the Friday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Final segment of the Friday Drive, and let's get right back to the Drive hotline. And John is up next. Hey, John, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Having Furman and Florida Atlantic in preseason for basketball sure beats having Marathon Oil.
Yeah, it does, and it's great that that fans are going to be able to see these games, and the proceeds are going to great causes too.
I think it's so much better than it was a generation ago. Hey, had some thoughts on the ball game tomorrow, the Auburn-Missouri game. I'm really curious, just a question, a comment on it. Really curious the status of Keldrick. I feel like if we can get a pass rush, I think that'll be effective. And secondly, just wanted y'all's thoughts out of the bye week. I want to see these freshman receivers, specifically Perry Thompson. I would love to see Perry Thompson get about 3-4 targets in this game, maybe a red zone look or two. Eventually, somebody's going to take away Lambert Smith, and we'll have to do something else in the passing game, and I think he would be a good option. I think you wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if they move anybody around to be able to create some of those opportunities, because the way it's been up till this point is Perry has been working at the same spot as KLS, as Keandre. So to have Perry on the field usually means you don't have Keandre. I wonder if they come up with some ways of being able to get them on the field. Away your best guy.
But some of that so that Perry doesn't have to learn, like, all the routes at multiple positions, right? You know, they sort of wanted Perry and Cam and Malcolm to have homes at specific spots. I wonder if you'd be more comfortable moving KLS around because he's somebody
who... that's what I mean. I just wonder if there's some shifting, some...
Yeah, I think between Lambert, I mean, I also wonder if Perry and Cam play together or if they could play the same position where you have them alternating snaps to get Perry involved more. You could get Cam involved more too. It's not just about, I mean, he's played a lot of snaps, but it's I think the different ways he's been involved has been a little underwhelming. And I'll tell you somebody else. We haven't mentioned him on this show. Like, if you had told me that four Power Five games into the season, Rivaldo would have 10 catches, I would say feels.
I thought the fact that Auburn had better talented wide receiver was going to really open things up for Rivaldo. And as much as Auburn's been throwing it, they haven't targeted Rivaldo that much.
Yeah, 10 catches, I think 135 yards, no touchdowns in the four Power Conference games for Rivaldo this season. It's been a quiet start. You wonder how much of that is on Rivaldo needing to do things better and how much of that is on an offense that needs to figure out ways to get him the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's really hard to describe what's been going on with the offense because there have been some big plays. We've seen a lot more big plays this year than we did a year ago. But we haven't seen Auburn be able to consistently move the ball with multiple first downs and be able to cash in on points. They've been a team that's been pretty good between the 20s or actually between the 30s, it seems like, and then have struggled some. And that's one of the reasons why, as Rainman's saying, Auburn's averaging as few points as they are in Power 5 games.
And Auburn is near the bottom of Power 5 college football in starting field position.
Yep.
They absolutely have to. I mean, and some of that's when you get pinned deep with a punt or something. That's one thing.
Some of it, you tip your cap to the other team able to do that.
But the penalties on kick returns?
Yeah.
How many times has Auburn started behind the 20?
There have been three or four times when Auburn's brought a kickoff out and barely gotten the ball to around the 25-yard line and look back and there's a flag and you end up starting
inside
your 10.
The offense isn't good enough to consistently overcome that either. Right. So, I mean, you got to find ways to avoid those kind of mistakes.
Does sound like Auburn's going to be fairly healthy. It looks like they'll have, as far as we know, everybody who has been banged up will be good to go. Auburn's going to need to get after Brady Cook tomorrow. They really are. I mean, that was what really – seemed to, spark the Texas A&M defense as they came after Brady Cook, put pressure on him, and he was unable to be very accurate.
And if Missouri can, if Missouri can win first down more than they did against A&M, Auburn could be in a lot of trouble.
You're right.
I mean, it was second and long and third and long all game against A&M.
Auburn can relate to that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's been way too much second and long.
It was, and Georgia didn't face it. Didn't feel like Georgia faced a third and long.
No.
The whole time in Athens, it was consistently second and reasonable,
second
and third
and
short,
four or less. Yeah. It seemed like all day.
And if Auburn could start doing that to teams, that'd be a dream. And you have to avoid being on the other side of that. And Missouri would love to give Brady Cook manageable, favorable positions to try to attack.
All right, so what are you thinking? I said, look, I've been saying this week, it's the show me state. Auburn needs to show us, show something. This is it, I really think. I mean, I think if Auburn loses this one, it's hard for me to imagine they're going to win next Saturday night against Kentucky, and then they'd be coming home on a 5-game losing streak to take a Vandy team that's thrilled to death to be where they are. Mm-hmm. So I think Auburn's got to win. I think they have an opportunity to score some points. They need to cash in this time. I took Auburn by 3.
Yeah, I think Auburn's got a real shot. Like you said, everything that we've talked about the whole show, we got to run the ball. We got to be smart. We got to have time of possession, no penalties or very few. Win the kicking game, like you just said, Bill, and no turnovers or very few. But I really feel good. I think, the week off has to help. The early start helps. Plus, they got to be hungry, and I think there's some mm-hmm. coaches and players with their backs to the wall.
Yeah, close game. I'm thinking maybe Auburn builds an early lead and hangs on. I don't. The fact that it's a close game gives you pause because that hasn't worked for Auburn.
Nope. Yep.
It has worked for Missouri, but I think Auburn's got just enough in this one. And I agree. It's gonna be tough to bounce back after a loss tomorrow.
We've talked about what's coming up tonight, 6:30 on Wings 94.3 for Auburn High, 6:30 on AU 100 for Lee Scott. How about the game day on Wings tomorrow? 6:00 tomorrow morning for Uncle T-Bone and Jack. So roll over and listen to those guys.
Biscuits and gravy with Uncle T-Bone and Jack tomorrow
morning.
That's going
to do it. Don, have a great weekend.
Thank you, guys.
We're back Monday. Brian Matthews joins us. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.